So friends, as promised, I have the incredible Lori back with us. And if you guys remember, and hopefully you listened to the episode or two, Lori was on and shared an incredible ghost story with us and then was kind enough to share a bunch of backstory that you can find only on Patreon because she is that kick-ass. She has to be exclusive and elite. So Lori, welcome to the show again. I am so excited that you're with us. And if I could have you on every day, I would, because we, like, when we start talking, it just goes and goes and goes. Like, it's like we never skip a beat. Right? I love it. It is so much fun.
Well, hello. It's great to be back.
Yes, I'm super happy to have you. I'm so happy. Like, oh my God. If I had the energy right now and I wasn't weighed down with turkey, I would be doing cartwheels and lighting sparklers.
You and me both.
So what have you been doing since the last... What's that?
I said you and me both.
Yes, yes. What have you been doing since the last time we talked to you?
Oh, gosh, what haven't I been doing? I believe the last time we talked, I was getting ready for a big trip. One of our ceremonies, our Sundance ceremony. And that was awesome. Really, really good experience this year. A lot of good stuff. And after that, there are a couple of other things that have been going on as far as we got our own sacred space set up here for ceremonies here at the house.
Nice.
So we've started that. And the activity has been tremendous. And I think there's a lot of good things coming up for this new year, given what's been going on. So I am super excited to see what this new year brings for us because of all of this.
That's really exciting. And I cannot wait to dive into all of that. So let's start off with the Sundance ceremony. And you and I have talked offline about this, and it is such a cool ceremony. It's such a cool thing to talk about and to learn about and to, I can only assume, take, you know, be part of, to participate in. I can only imagine like how intense that is and exciting that is. So for anyone that doesn't know what a Sundance ceremony is, can you explain it and kind of like what the tradition is and the backstory of it?
Well, the Sundance ceremony, there are several different Native tribes throughout the country. And a lot of them practice a version of it. They might call it something different, either Sundance, Thirsty Dance, things of that nature, or the dance. But basically it boils down to members of the community come together, or several communities will come together for a four-day intense ritual where members volunteer to go ahead and pray for their community or communities for their well-being, their good, their healing, for Thanksgiving. There's several different reasons for it. Each one is very personal to the communities, to the individuals. But it's a four-day intense ritual where, depending on the tribe you come from, you spend 4 days straight dancing and praying in a meditative state to get those prayers heard and answered for your community. Now, that's the overall gist of it. Depending on the tribe, how that looks will differ from place to place. In the traditions that I've learned and chosen to follow, this, for the most part, is 4 days of getting yourself ready up to the first day of the dance, and then 4 days of the actual dancing itself. They form a sacred circle. The dancers will dance within this circle, and it's done in several rounds throughout the day. So you start off right before the sun comes up. You dance all day long. You got people drumming, the music's going in the background. And what we'll do is throughout the day, the music that's being played, the songs that are being sung, sacred songs that are being sung to call in spirits and to help us achieve a meditative state, we'll start going around the circle in patterns and things of that nature to build up the energy to send out those prayers. It can get very intricate and very complicated, but that's pretty much the gist of the thing. So you go, and each individual who's actually participating, who's dancing, will give of themselves. So there's, in most cases, there's no food or water for those 4 days, and that helps with your meditative state and to get you into that sacred space where you can commune with the spirits on the other side.
That's amazing. And I already would be out because I need food and water. I couldn't do it.
No, it gets pretty intense. Personally for me, it's not the food thing. 'Cause after the first day you're like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Not a big deal. The going without the water though, that can be a challenge. It's a tough space to be in, but focusing on those prayers, there's a lot leading up to it. So by the time you get there, you're in a mental state, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, that kind of prepares you for all of this. And of course, once you've gone through it a few times, it becomes a little bit easier to kind of get yourself mentally ready for it and get prepared for it. Not that it's always easy, depending on what you're praying for and what's going on, it can be difficult. But there's a lot of prep time throughout the year that leads up to this. In some traditions, we start making what's called little prayer ties. And these are little individual bundles of material in which we say our prayers in and put together, and they wind up on a long little string, one continuous string. And in some traditions, there's 405 of them that we make. So throughout the year, you're putting these things together on a regular basis, and that kind of gets you ready for it. There are the things that we do to prep the actual ceremony grounds. Like I said, the ceremony itself takes place within a sacred circle, and we do a lot of prep to make sure that the inside of the circle is a good space. You've had it on your shows before where you talk about intentions and energy and asking help from spirit guides and things of that nature. So this is not too different from that. The premise is the same. You create a sacred space. We do smudging, you know. And there's different types of materials that we use for different reasons when we smudge. You've mentioned using the sage, correct?
Correct.
We'll use sage for certain things. We'll use sweetgrass for other things. Cedar is a prominent one because if you need to make sure you get rid of some bad spirits and keep them away from what you're doing, cedar's a huge thing for us. It keeps them out like that. But when we want to call them in for a ceremony specifically, we'll use sweetgrass. And we'll smudge with sweetgrass to call them in. So we'll do these within the circle. In some cases, we'll put up prayer sticks, which is the same thing, the 405. And they'll have little prayer ties on them, and we'll form a giant circle with those as well. And those, it's a protective barrier. And we put certain doors in there so that we can go in and out, and certain spirits can come in and out, but it keeps others completely out. And again, that's for our protection as well. And in the center, well, I guess I should actually sit here and kind of give kind of like a chronological thing of what happens. Because once we get the actual circle area set up to build up this energy, to get it to go up and send up some prayers, we get that situated. And in most cases, for some of these ceremonies, they'll have a tree at the very, very center. It's usually a cottonwood tree. And the prep is all to make sure that this tree, which in some cases you can kind of say it represents the tree of life, we bring that in. So we'll go out, we'll actually find one. Usually the spiritual leader is the one who does that, goes out and finds and picks the tree. And once the grounds have been prepped and ready for it, we'll go out. The tree will be cut down and carried back to the actual grounds where we'll have the ceremony. And it will be planted into the ground. So a hole will have been dug and the tree will go in there. And once the tree is erected, the day before the ceremony, is when the rest of the grounds start getting prepped like that. Either a barrier around the circle, like prayer sticks, things of that nature. In some cases, they'll erect a wall around the entire circle with only like one way in and out. And then there's like a solid barrier between you and the outside. But once that's done and the tree goes up and all of the, we have, like I said, the prayer ties that we prep throughout the year. Those either go on the tree, they go around the areas. We have prayer robes that we make. I believe on one of your episodes, you were talking about vessels that spirits can use to inhabit. Something about dolls, I think it was.
That sounds like me.
But we do that on purpose. We actually make like these little prayer robes, little bundles, using cloth, and we use tobacco, and we'll make a little bundle of the tobacco, so it looks like a little head with like little arms and like a coat of some kind, so that we actually invite the spirits to actually inhabit that, so that they have a vessel in which they can interact with us.
Are those the prayer ties?
No, those are different. The prayer ties, they just make this little baby little bundle.
Oh, okay.
But the spirit robes themselves will be bigger.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
They'll be bigger, and you can actually tell they're specifically made to look like a little head and like little shoulders.
Gotcha.
So you'll see them. The prayer ties themselves will be these tiny little things, and the spirit robes can vary in size, but they'll be much larger, very distinct, little head area. Like I said, little shoulders, and we hang them up so that they can swing freely and move about. And again, we're actually asking for spirits to come and visit us and help us and carry these prayers or help guide us. Or deliver messages. And so we're purposely giving them a place where they can inhabit it for a minute and interact with us and kind of dance with us. Again, send us messages or help us out, you know, if you need a little extra strength, so they can provide that for you, things of that nature. So yeah, I've been in some ceremonies where we have little spirit robes up, right? And no breeze, no nothing, no wind. And you'll see these guys just kind of wiggling around and moving. Mm-hmm, and it's really cool because you know that they've heard you. And you're over there going, no, 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 wait a minute.
Yeah. I'm like, stop moving that.
So, no, because, yeah, it's funny because, like I said, I've listened to your show and some of your other guests and your teacher. I was listening to the one episode with your teacher and what you're talking about, these dolls and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, we're making kind of like these primitive looking dolls because we're asking them to do this on purpose. We want them to come do this.
Right. So you're listening to us and you're like, psh, amateurs. You guys don't even know.
But there's a big difference in that particular case. You have a possibly an uninvited guest.
Yes.
And
you're
trying to figure out why they're there. In our case, we're inviting them. We want them to come and we want them to do this while we do the ceremony.
Are they ancestors so do you know who is inhabiting the spirit robes? Are they ancestors of the dancers, ancestors of anybody that's there? Are they even ancestors at all? Could they be, I mean, like, do you know who they are? Or are you just
some
calling
people can
and
pick up on some of this stuff?
Oh, gotcha.
Some people can. You know, not we may not know for sure. If it's intended for a certain individual, maybe they'll know. They'll get a message. People who are more in tune to listening to the spirits or can commune with the spirits like that can pass on those messages for us. So, or if you are trying to invite somebody in particular, when you make that spirit robe, that's your intention. You know, if I could have a family, like a particular family member to come hang out with us, then my intention for making this spirit robe is if that individual wants to come hang out with us, for them to do so. So sometimes people will do that as well.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, so just like, you know, what you've talked about before, figuring out who's attached to something. If somebody is in tune to that, then yes, they can pass that on or they can discern that for themselves if somebody specific is attached to that spirit robe.
But otherwise, you don't really need to know who it is, just that they're there for a specific purpose, which is they've been called in to help with this ceremony, correct?
Correct. And that's what we're doing. We're asking spirits of the ancestors. This ceremony has been carried on for thousands of years in one form or another. And unfortunately, over the years, the ceremony has changed. And the ceremony has changed because at one point in time, it was illegal for the indigenous people to practice their own beliefs. And a lot of those teachings and customs, some of those intricacies were lost. And it's hard to believe, or it's hard to kind of grasp that concept until you realize that for the Native people here in North America, after it became illegal for them to practice their own beliefs, for them to start that back up again wasn't legal until 1978.
No kidding.
The federal act that let that be legal again, that gave them the right to practice their beliefs once more, has been around since 78. And I was born before that, so it has not been that long, and a lot of these ceremonies had to be carried out in super secrecy because it was a federal crime to do so. So it had to be passed down by word of mouth, and most of this was, but a lot of the intricacies of some of these ceremonies, unfortunately, were lost over time, over the generations. And so what we have today is a little bit of, actually a couple of ceremonies that have been passed down. So they've morphed into something a little bit different. The premise of the ceremonies are still the same. But because of this, because of the fact that they've lost a lot of some of the old ways, one of the things about calling in the spirits, which they've always done, but more so now, is to bring back ancestral memory, bring back those core things that made them who they are and that made them the people that they are. So a lot of inviting those spirits, like you asked earlier about the ancestors, that's exactly what it is. You're inviting these old ancestors to come help and participate, not only to help carry out these prayers and get through the ceremony, but maybe bring back some of this ancient knowledge as well that was lost.
That's incredible. So I know in learning about Reiki, we learned about how sacred the teachings are and how close to the vest the ancestors kept all of the information. I mean, there were teachers in the history of Reiki that wouldn't allow their students to take notes of any kind. And if they did, they had to destroy them before they left for the day because they didn't want any of this getting out. Is it similar with the Sundance ceremony or any of the Native American teachings, or were they to your knowledge, were they more free with their traditions and wanting to share this information, and, you know, for whatever reason? Do you know what their stance was on that?
Well, when you look back in history, and a lot of this was, again, everything was passed down verbally. A lot of traditions talk about how they would share some of their ceremonies with other tribe members and things of this nature. So it was, a lot of this was shared freely, the ceremonies themselves, for others to participate or be part of. Some of it was kept, as you say, close to the vest, because they're considered sacred. You know, it wasn't so much that it's, oh my God, it's a big secret, but it's very sacred. So you treat it that way. Unfortunately, nowadays, because it was illegal for so long to do, it is kind of turned into more of the secretive thing. So a lot of folks don't like to talk about it, because that's kind of the air that they understand us in now. And a lot of individuals have a hard time sharing this information because of that. They look at it as, this is not only sacred, but this isn't something we should be sharing. But again, that also comes from a space of, it was illegal. It was a federal crime. There have been a lot of, unfortunately, in the name of carrying out the law, a lot of atrocities that have happened because of that. And so you have this air around these ceremonies where a lot of the indigenous people aren't willing to really share this. However, you have a generation coming out now where, if we don't start sharing some of this and being a little bit more open, unfortunately, we might lose more of it.
Agreed.
Fewer and fewer people are aware of some of these ceremonies. And the sad part is fewer and fewer of the coming generations are participating in it. So you're having this situation where a lot of these ceremonies are being done more by elders and an older population, and fewer of the younger generation are taking part in this, because the information is just not being openly shared. And unfortunately, the younger generation are being lost in this space where they don't know quite exactly who they are, and they're really grasping for something. So there's a movement to try and spread these ceremonies a little further to get this younger generation back to their roots, so that this isn't lost, so they don't lose their next generation, literally. So that is a very good question, because that is a huge thing that comes up around a lot of this stuff. And it's a huge determination whether people do talk about this or not. Again, it's a sacred thing, but it's the secrecy around it, in some cases, is kind of stifling the passing on of knowledge to the next generation because of that. So it's a very difficult situation. It's a very difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely can. And that was one of the things, you know, so I said earlier that you and I have talked offline about this, and you shared some of the magic of the Sundance ceremony. And I was so honored to be on the receiving end to get that information. So that was a big question I had for you, is when we had decided to do this episode, which I was so happy about. I really wanted to make sure that it was okay for you to talk about that. I was like, they're not going to come get you, are they? Like, I want to make sure you're safe. So, but no, I get it. There's so much tradition. There's so much, just so much history. And in the course of the year, you know, over the course of the years, that stuff is taken from you, from your culture, from your, you know, just in many different forms. And right now, like you said, I think it's such a good point. It's so important to spread the word and allow people to consume that information and to become more knowledgeable, so that they too can share it. Because, you know, I don't know, I think I may come from a different school of thought, but I am not a believer in, because I am Dominican or Puerto Rican or whatever, like those things have to stay with me or with Dominicans and Puerto Ricans specifically. I love when the lines get crossed, because I'm like, there shouldn't be any lines. Like, we should all share that freely. If you feel like my traditions really vibe with you, come join, you know, like I love that people want to learn about it and they want to participate and partake. And, you know, if it's something that resonates with them, that they can freely be part of it instead of being shut out of it because they don't come from that culture or it's not part of their heritage, or do you know what I mean? Like,
yes, exactly. And the wonderful thing is, especially if you talk to some of the elders in some of these communities, and they'll tell you that, no, we used to, this tribe and that tribe would come together and they would have a ceremony, and the one side would say, hey, you know, why are you using that? And they'll explain, well, this is for this. And sometimes cultures would say, hey, you know, that's a good idea. We're going to start incorporating a little bit of that in what we do. And then the other side would say the same thing. Hey, that was pretty cool. That was some powerful stuff. And do you mind if we do that as well? And no. So a lot of this got shared. So different ceremonies and different types, different things that are being used for the ceremony got shared back and forth. So you have one culture that, for the most part, they use what people will commonly refer to as, say, a peace pipe, which is not really the term for it. It's a sacred pipe. In one tradition, it's called a chinupa. And that's kind of, it's specific to a certain area. However, because cultures interacted and they had ceremonies together, they were, those ideas and those tools were gifted to other tribes as well. And they started using it. My family background comes from Mexico. They didn't use things like a chinupa. They used things like corn husks for similar purposes. And so that was also gifted as they came up north of the border back in the day, where now you have some Plains Indians that when they do certain ceremonies, instead of using the chinupa or the pipe, they'll use a corn husk and roll it up, and they'll use that instead. So yes, things like that can cross between lines, cross between cultures. And it's a wonderful thing because you get these different experiences and you get these melding of stories that they paint a more colorful picture and make for, some of these ceremonies make for like this beautiful energy that when it all comes together, it's just this wonderful thing.
I bet. Yeah. I totally believe that. And I'm with you. I think it just gets better and better because you also create like a dialogue, you know, you open up these lines of communication where it's not like mine, yours, you know, it does become communal, if you will. And it just, I think, allows you to grow in such an incredible way when you do open up like that and you say, hey, this is, you know, I'm using a pencil. What are you using over there? Oh, here you go. Like you trade these things off and you make it bigger and better and more magical. And so I am really excited that you are able to freely share this and teach us, because I've been dying to learn about this and to really get the word out there with our, you know, our podcast family, because I, you know, just all the stuff that we get to talk about and this topic specifically was so interesting to me, and I hope, you know, it resonates with everybody else. But that said, I got you way off course because I started asking questions like I typically do. So let's go back to
We'll see where this, like I said, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah, you know? it's going in many different directions. I'm so happy. So the Sundance ceremony. So it starts off, we were talking about, it's a 4-day ceremony and there's 4 days of prep for the dancers. And I believe when we left off, we were talking about the tree and how the tree is ceremoniously selected by some of the tribe members, which is like the medicine man, I think is what we had talked about in the past. And the tree has to volunteer itself, and it is then cut down and it is carried, very ceremoniously carried. And we talked in the past, you and I, off air about some of the more specific things that go on with the tree, and it's everything is so specific and it has such a purpose. So when the tree is cut down and it is moved to its new location, it is rested on a stand, so it's not on the ground. It is cleaned. The wounds are tended to. Like, it is so just, I remember you talking about that and feeling so warm inside and magical that, like, I look at everything as like it's living. I give everything a pronoun. I like, that's just how I operate. Like, I've always done that. And I just, everything has energy to me. Everything is alive in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, inanimate objects also have their own energy because we touch them, or, you know, they're in our space, whatever. It doesn't matter. But so I thought it was so cool that there is something so specific and so intentional about taking care of this tree that had been cut down. Because I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna get off course real quick. When I see like a lot of Christmas trees that are just waiting to be taken home, like, I feel so crushed for them. I'm like, oh my God, you guys were happy in your little neighborhood with your families, and then they cut you down rudely, and here you are waiting for a new family. Just like, I go through this whole dialogue in my head like a dum-dum. But so I thought it was so cool that this is part of the ceremony, and the tree is tended to in such a very specific and pure way. So it is cleaned, the wounds are tended to, and it's decorated while it's sitting on this wooden beam, so it's off of the ground. And so you were talking about the spirit robes. Is this the time when the spirit robes are incorporated, or are the spirit robes used at another time?
No, and this would be about the time when a lot of this happens. And you're absolutely right, because when we go out and do this thing, like I was explaining to you before, yes, when the shaman or the medicine man, whatever you want to call him, goes out to kind of pick this tree, and that's, I do use that term loosely, mm-hmm. because there is an interaction. It's not just us. We're going to go out and we're going to collect all this stuff. We're going to grab all this stuff. We're going to make everything look pretty. We're going to paint certain things. We're going to put little ribbons on certain things, whatever the case may be. It's not just us going out, doing all of this, collecting this, putting it up, and hey, we're ready to run. We're ready to rock and roll. It's a two-way thing here. So like when the shaman goes out to find the tree actually volunteers for this. There's a communication there. And because the tree is a living thing, when the whole community goes out for the tree to be cut down, we celebrate it. We dress up for the occasion. We sing to the tree. Once the tree is cut down, it's not allowed to touch the ground. It's decided to sacrifice itself. It's going to hang out with us for the next few days for the ceremony. It's going to do its part too. So we give it that respect. We carry it back. That's why we carry it back. It doesn't touch the ground. We get it back to the actual ceremony grounds. And yes, like you said, we go ahead and we set up these little like pedestal type of things. And the tree will rest on that until it's ready to be put up. But while it's resting, yes, we tend to the wounds that we've made to it. If we had to, you know, where we cut it, all of those are covered up, that type of thing. Once we're prepared and all that's taken care of, that's when we decorate the tree. We put the prayer ties in it. We put the spirit robes in it. We put all this pretty material. There's other little things that have been made that get hung up into the treetop itself, so that when the tree is put up, it's decorated. It's got all these spirit robes. It's got all these prayers that people have been working on for the last year, all these prayers that people bring with them, specifically for whatever, for healing, for family members, whatever the case may be. All of that gets put on the tree and everything. When it finally gets put into the hole so that it can stand upright, and we pack it down so that the tree can stand up and show off all of this stuff and start working with us. Even the tree gets dressed up. So the tree is considered female. So once the tree is put into place, we actually put a skirt around the tree so that the tree also is dressed up and can dance with us.
What if she prefers jeans and a t-shirt?
You know, I would prefer jeans and a t-shirt sometimes too, but there are days where I'm like, really? You mean I have to wear a skirt?
I don't want to.
I mean, we've known each other for a long time. When was the last time you remember seeing me in a dress?
Listen, I probably have two or three hanging in my closet that are dusty because I just love jeans and a t-shirt. Like, it's just...
Jeans are my thing, you know? But it's also part of tradition. And this is a huge thing too. And this is something that even when I actually stopped and thought about it and kind of, and meditated on this, I'm like, well, duh, that actually makes perfect sense. So traditions in of themselves, because they're passed down from one generation to the next. So they come down from our ancestors somewhere along the line. Traditions themselves have power. And when you sit there and you do things a certain way, the ancestors recognize it. They're like, oh my God, I know this. This is familiar. So when they hear something familiar, when they see something familiar, that call goes out to them right away and they hear it right away. So if for some reason, like a lot of these individuals, when they go to some of these ceremonies, okay, let's just say they don't understand the language. Okay. Just because you speak a different language doesn't mean the ancestors are not going to understand you. It just may take them a little longer to answer the call because it's not familiar to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So when we do these ceremonies, we carry on these traditions because it's familiar. And that familiarity has built up enough energy and power over the generations that every time you use it, not only is that, let's just say, the call answered quicker, but it brings that power with it as well. And it doesn't take as much time to build up.
That makes sense.
I guess it's like the best way I can explain that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So yeah, I mean, I can sympathize if she wants to wear jeans and a t-shirt, but wearing a skirt is going to get things going a lot faster and get on really good.
Yeah, the ancestors don't know anything about your Old Navy jeans, ma'am. Take them off.
I mean, some of them can recognize me now that I can, like, all right, you know, it's me. Yeah. We've had these conversations before, so, but still, even if I'm doing something here at home, I have to remind myself that, you know what, I better put on the skirt, even though I'm in my own space, and it might be just me or me and myself and like a couple people, putting on that skirt is part of that tradition that gets this going. So that's one of the things that I have to be conscious of as well.
Yeah, and I imagine it's probably like putting on your, you know, your sports uniform, and it gets you in a specific headspace where you're about to do something, and it just kind of pulls that trigger for you. So yeah, I totally see that. So let's talk about, we were talking about decorating the tree, and we've talked about the spirit robes and the prayer ties. Let's talk more about those prayer ties, because they have a very specific purpose, where you said these are the tools that are used to carry the prayers, if you will. Is that right? And there's a specific number of them. Is that right?
Yes. For us that dance, and again, not all cultures do this the way I was taught we do this, but you prepare for this, and part of that preparation is you're supposed to be in that space all year long. So it's also a tool, as we're sitting there making these things throughout the year, and like I said, it's on a continuous chain, so you have this string and you have all these attached to it. You're putting in their prayers for the people. So it might be, I talked to so-and-so and they're having some problems. So maybe that evening when I sit down and I do my prayers, I'll put prayers in there for so-and-so, for their healing, for what they're going through. when you sit there and you think about your community and what some of the needs are, you put those prayers in there as well. So it keeps you in that space throughout the year. But if you're going in there and you volunteer to do this and stuff, it has to be a very conscious effort that every day is a reminder, this is why I do this. This is how I'm preparing for this. And when you put those prayers in there, you're putting them in there specifically so they can be answered. So you have to, it's one of those things where the headspace, you have to be in that space. So you put the prayer in there and you know that there's a cycle to this. The ceremony brings a cycle to answering these prayers. So it's a very deliberate thing. I talked about prayer ties going onto the tree. There's the way that it's been explained to me over the years is that the prayers can be answered in a couple of different ways. If you pray for something, then you expect those prayers to be answered. So the other half of the equation is that if you expect those prayers to be answered, then you have to be patient for those prayers to be answered as well. Don't jump on the first thing that comes along just because it's close enough to what you were asking for. Let the process do it. Let the process take hold and go through. So with that being said, we put the prayers under the tree. Some of them can be answered right away, and that's wonderful. But the tree also helps in preparing and getting those prayers out there. So the way it's been explained, it's kind of like a 2-year cycle. There's those prayers that can be answered right away. Once the ceremony is done, the tree stays up for the entire year. So when we come back the following year, all of those ties, all of those prayer robes and things of that nature are still in the tree. The tree is still up. In that preparation, those 4 days leading up to the beginning of the ceremony where we start preparing ourselves and the grounds for it, the old tree comes down before we go out and get the new tree. And again, the old tree comes down. We don't let it touch the ground. We treat it the same way we did before we put it up. But when we've set it down, there's a whole little ceremony with that. It's laid down and everything. And then members of the community start taking off all of the prayer ties that are attached to it, start taking off all of the prayer robes that are attached to it. All of the stuff that was put up the year before, we take off of there and we collect it. And we make sure nothing gets left behind. Everything gets collected. So once that is done, we take that to the sacred fire that's been started to get this whole ceremony going. And then we burn it all. And in burning that, you release any other prayers that have not been answered yet, that have not made it out there yet. So by burning it, you release what hasn't been done yet so that those can get answered. And then the tree itself, excuse me, will be set aside and we'll let it lay there for another year. It's put up on a pedestal. It doesn't touch the ground, but it'll be set aside somewhere off the side of the actual ceremony grounds where it will hang out, watch the new ceremony this year with the new tree and everything. And then after that ceremony is done the following year, so this is 2 years later now, we will take that tree and we'll go ahead and cut it up, and that the wood from that tree will be used for the sacred fire to start it the second year. Whatever prayers are still attached to that tree, because we took all the ties and everything off of there, but some of those prayers might still be hanging out with the tree. So that prayer might need a lot of work and a lot of assistance, and it takes some time to answer that prayer. So that tree will work with that prayer. So once we cut it up and it goes into the fire, the last of those prayers are released at the end of that 2-year cycle.
Wow. So when there's a ceremony, there's typically going to be two trees that are off to the side on their own pedestals. One from the year prior and one.
It's one. There's the one from the year prior and the current one that you're using. So the one that you cut up that year, when you take the other one down, there's always going to be a rotation. So there's going to be the one tree that's been cut up when you get there.
Right.
So like the 4 days prior to you're prepping the grounds, you're going to cut up that one tree, and the wood from tree will start the sacred. And then the tree from the year before will be taken down. We'll take care of all of that, and then that will be put aside, and then we'll go get the new tree that will go ahead and take its place.
Gotcha. So the
tree, there's always this cycle. There's always this rotation.
So the tree that ends its 2 year cycle, that's the one that gets cut up and it's used for the fire.
Correct.
Okay. I'm with you. Okay. All right. I'm caught up. It's so cool. It's just so cool how everything is so specific. There's a purpose for every single thing. And the 2 year cycle with the prayers, and it's just such a cool process. So you have the tree, it's decorated, it's up, and now it's time for the 4 day ceremony and the dancing begins. So let's talk about that 4 days. Like, what goes on during those 4 days?
Oh my goodness. The basic mechanics of it are always this. No, because it's like this living thing. So you get there, the basic mechanics of the ceremony are always the same. It's 4 days. You start your morning off. In our case, what I've been practicing, what I've learned, the 4 days leading up to this, we have a sweat lodge in the morning and a sweat lodge in the evening. This is a purification process for us to get us in that space.
So this is when you say to get us, you're talking you as the dancers who have,
correct,
who are part of the ceremony. And are the dancers, do they volunteer or are they selected?
They're volunteered.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where it's kind of akin to the priesthood. It's a calling. So, not everybody can dance. Not everybody who volunteers actually does dance, or there's differing situations.
Gotcha.
But it's a volunteer thing.
Okay.
You get the calling, you feel the pull to be in that circle. That's about the way I can describe it. It's this pull, it's this need that, you know, I need to be in that circle, that's where I belong.
Gotcha.
And there's a whole process to this as well. You have to discern whether that's really where you need to be. So there's a process for that. And that's usually where things like a vision quest, where you go out and you pray and you commune with the spirits and things of that nature to see whether this is really where you belong.
So the process you're talking about right now, that's before you even become a sun dancer. Is that right? That's not like you're a sun dancer and you're volunteering for a specific ceremony.
Yeah, no, there's a whole process behind this.
Okay.
And in some cultures, this process takes a long time. You know, in some cultures, you have to be a helper for 4 years. And then once you've done that, then you move on to the next project or the next task. And it's kind of like, and in some cases, it's kind of like an apprenticeship. And a lot of these cultures, it's a 4 year cycle. There's four seasons, everything's in fours. So you have these cycles of like 4 years, is how they look at it. So you do one thing for 4 years, you move on to the next one for 4 years and things of that nature until you get to the point where if you're meant to be out there, then you take that step. But there is a process.
Gotcha.
Again, before you get out there.
So as a dancer, like after you've gone through this entire process, do you, and you do become a dancer, do you volunteer to dance at a ceremony, or do the, or are you, do you have to be selected to come and dance at a specific ceremony? Do you know what I mean? If there's one coming up in, you know, the next quarter or, you know, whatever it is, do you say, oh, I'm going to be available, I can do that one? Or do they have to say, hey, would you be part of this one? Like, we want you specifically.
You find a little combination of both. Most of the time you volunteer. in a lot of cases, because you are already a member of a community, they know who you are. So if you feel that calling and you've talked to, like, you know, your spiritual leader, or somebody who can, somebody who's teaching you the different ways of these ceremonies, things of that nature. And then once you get to that point and you're like, hey, I feel this calling, this is the direction I'm being pulled towards, then they'll go ahead and they probably will pull you aside and they'll work with you. And if that's where you're meant to be, then it's a communication. You actually go and say, you know, I volunteer, or, you know, I felt the calling, whatever you want to call it. And you'll sit down with, either the chief, or the spiritual leader, both usually, and see whether or not they'll let you dance. So it is a little bit of a process. But once you start dancing, it's a commitment. And again, a lot of these run in 4-year cycles. So once you start, like when you first start out, it's a minimum of a 4-year commitment. That's one full cycle. And then technically the way they look at it is, okay, you've done your 4-year cycle and say, hey, I'm this is my 5th year. I want to dance. Well, that starts another cycle. So that's another 4-year cycle. So that's kind of how they look at it. So it's once you make a commitment to do this, basically you're making a 4-year commitment. And once the 4-year commitment is up and you do it again, technically you're making another 4-year commitment. So when you start dancing at a particular place, or maybe you've been invited to a different dance somewhere else, sometimes that does happen, then it's the same thing. Hey, you get invited, you say you accept the invitation, but when you accept the invitation, you still have to technically present yourself as a volunteer, and they still have to accept you, even though you've been invited.
Oh, wow, that's different.
It's kind of like a, I guess, in best way to put it is a kind of like a spiritual contract, maybe. You know, yes, you invited me. And yes, I accept I accept the invitation, but I am volunteering. It's making that commitment that you're still volunteering, even though you've been asked. You still have to say, yeah, I'm volunteering.
Gotcha.
And again, they still have to accept you after you present yourself. So in some cases, in one of the other ceremonies, when we show up, we actually present like a bundle of gifts or something like that. And that's our way of saying, I am volunteering. And when they accept it, then that's their way of saying, then yes, you come dance. So some of these, yeah, it's a little bit of both. You can be invited to a place, but you still have to like volunteer to go. And they still have to accept that in your willingness to do that.
Gotcha. So you are now, you're at the point where you've been selected, or you've volunteered to be part of a specific ceremony, and you start the 4-day process of prepping, and you go through the, what did you call it, Lori?
The purification?
Yes. Thank you. I wanted to say Vision Quest, but I know it's not called the Vision Quest. The Vision Quest.
Yeah, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah. So it's the Sweat Lodge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You start going through the Sweat Lodge, and you said you do the Sweat Lodge morning and evening?
Yes. It's twice a day. We get up first thing in the morning. It's kind of a misnomer. It's still dark out when we do it. So we get up really, really early, way before the sun comes up. We have our first lodge. And then we get ourselves ready for the day. So those 4 days leading up to it, there's a lot of things that need to be done to get the grounds ready, to get the circle ready and things of that nature. There's a lot of prep work that goes into this ahead of time. So we get our day started, get stuff going, put things together. And then in the evening, we have another lodge. So we do this twice a day. For the 4 days leading up to this. And then once the ceremony starts, we do the same. We still do the same thing. Before the ceremony starts, we get up early in the morning. We do our sweat lodge to get ourselves ready for that day. And then we get back to our camp. We get ready. We get dressed up. We get our materials put together, our tools put together, and get ourselves back to the area of the circle to get ready for the day's dance. And then at the end of the day, once we're done with the last round of the dance, then we have another sweat lodge. And then that goes ahead and takes care of us for the evening until we get up the next morning and we do it all over again. So that's the 4 days of the dance. So in addition to the actual dancing in the circle, we start our day and we end our day with the sweat lodge.
And the purpose of the sweat lodge is a purification, and it does it help to keep you guys protected as the dancers?
It's more for our prayers and to get us, like the 4 days prior to get us prepared mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know, all this stuff, to get us prepared for what's going to come up. And during the dance, I look at doing the lodges in the morning as, okay, you know, you get up in the morning and you get yourself ready for that, for the day. So, you know, in that sense, doing the sweat lodge in the morning is that spiritual cleansing that takes place to get you ready for the day. And then at the end of the day, when the dance is over, it's that, okay, anything that we need to, like, if we need like a little extra strength and we need to like kind of release what, you know, that day stuff, do it there so that you get a good night's rest and everything. And then you start the next day over again. You do the lodge, you get yourself ready, you get yourself purified, you get yourself prepped for that day, and then you end the day the same way.
That's incredible. And what is the sweat lodge experience like?
Oh, it's okay. I'm going to be biased here because I'm like, it's awesome. it's very grounding in a sense. You look at the sweat lodge itself, and you have this half dome shape. Basically, you go in there and it's covered up and everything. Again, a lot of the stuff comes in cycles and fours. So when we do a sweat lodge, we call it four rounds. So you get in there, you get yourself situated. A lot of people may have heard about it, what a sweat lodge basically is. You go in this half dome thing, it's covered up. They close it up. It's dark in there. They bring in some hot rocks and some water, and there's a lot of steam involved and things of that nature. But spiritually speaking, you go in there and you're looking at it as returning to the womb of Mother Earth. You're going back to a primal beginning almost, so that you can get yourself centered. So the way I look at it, you go in there, it's dark. So, you know, you're sending out your prayers, you're asking spirits to come in there and help you with your prayers, help you with different things. So you're going back to the very, very beginning. And then when you're done with the four rounds and you come out, it's like almost like a spiritual rebirth. You're coming out of the womb. And whatever you needed while you were in there, you take that with you. Whatever you needed to get rid of, leave that stuff behind. So when you come out, you don't carry that extra baggage with you anymore. But it's just this amazing thing. It's very, in some ways, it's very grounding because you tie yourself back to Mother Earth. You get very personal with that. For me, it's a lot. It's getting whatever I don't need, give it back to Mother Earth. She can take whatever whatever aspects that I don't need to carry anymore, and turn that into, I tell people Mother Earth can, it makes great fertilizer out of the junk in your life. Give it back to her.
It's a hell of a compost.
She will take that junk and make some compost at it, and then that will feed the next cycle of life. That's the way I look at it. And then on a spiritual level, you get to a point in the lodge, or at least I do personally, where you can connect with spirits. You can let yourself kind of go out there spiritually. I wouldn't quite call it like a astral projection sort of thing, but it's akin to being able to reach out, if you will, up to the stars, where you can ask for ancestral help. You can ask for healing. You can ask for help. You might get knowledge, things of that nature. There's just so much that can happen in a lodge, depending on what your intentions are. So, again, the mechanics of it are pretty much the same across the board. The experiences can vary. And it's just an amazing experience.
It sounds like it. And without you guys, the dancers going through this, I imagine, you know, I mean, like we've said so many times already in this episode, there's such a purpose for everything. And without you guys going through that cleansing and that grounding and being able to release your prayers, you know, you wouldn't be as effective or as in the zone during this 4-day period, because you're also functioning on no food, no water, and you're carrying quite a load. When you're talking energetically, you know, speaking energetically, you're carrying quite a load for yourselves, for the people that you're praying on behalf of, and keeping the ceremony going, you know, fluid the way it's supposed to. It's a lot. So I imagine that going through the sweat lodge 2 times a day is incredibly important.